the more that I learn about career development, and the more I think it's working with young people, I really love working with. I have three of my own teenagers, and I really enjoy, like, they're so positive, and this, it's so, I think this current generation of young people is so exciting. I think they hold so much potential. So, you know, the more I get into it, the more I love it.
Hello, and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career. Find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I'm lucky enough to have Lucy Sattler joining me. Thanks for joining me, Lucy.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
I'm really excited to get into our conversation today, dive into career development, which is something that I think we're both passionate about, and really getting your insight and expertise.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's a really important field, so it's great to get to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to first talk about the fact that we've tried many times to have this conversation, and it seems like everything has tried to stop it. So I'm sure people are going to get a lot out of it because we've persevered very hard to make this happen. The first time was internet issues on my end. And then last week you ended up having a power outage. Snakes in the house. I've got to ask, how big was the snake?
Well, to start off, it's completely non-venomous, but it was probably about that long.
Yeah, nice.
Maybe arm size. Very, very thin, but we have office cats, and one of the cats was sitting at a door, and I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. I wonder what's going on. I opened the door, and there's this snake just lying on the floor in the recording room. So I grabbed a bin and a stick and kind of convinced it to behave itself and walked it outside. So they live in the garden outside the office. So
I'm assuming it's just everyday life of a Queenslander, I guess, right?
Yeah, far north Queenslander, definitely. We get snakes. And we don't get the deadly spiders, I think, which I grew up in Western Sydney with all the funnel webs, and so I'd prefer snakes to deadly spiders, non-venomous snakes to deadly spiders.
Well, that's a positive. So I didn't say that. So you're the founder of Study Work Grow, and you're a career cluster creator. Would you be able to share what it is that you do through Study Work Grow?
Yeah, so Study Work Grow is a social enterprise, and we basically support schools, educators, careers advisors in Australia, but also right around the world. We're in about 29 different countries now, and we support them with lots of resources, information, guides, toolkits, online resources as well, so that they can have really positive career conversations with young people, because we know how important it is to have great career conversations, and I'm sure we're going to kind of touch on that a bit more later on, but it's something that it's quite difficult to start from scratch, and a lot of the time educators or career counsellors maybe don't have their own resource bank built up yet, so we can support them with lots of things and they get to pick from and make their own and use in whichever way they like.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, we'll deep dive into that a bit more. But I was also keen to hear how you got into career development.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a journey. I was 17 when I left home and joined the Air Force. Came in controller, so that wasn't very career development driven. But when I had my first kid, first baby, I left the Air Force and was trying to work out what to do, and so I started helping out my dad, who was a careers advisor in a public high school in Western Sydney, and he had a little newsletter at the time, and so I helped him bring that online a bit more and make it look a bit shinier, and took it around Australia, and yeah, here we are sort of 18 years later. It's 20 years in 2026. So yeah, it's been a while now, but the more that I learn about career development, and the more I think it's working with young people, I really love working with. I have three of my own teenagers, and I really enjoy, like, they're so positive, and I think this current generation of young people is so exciting. I think they hold so much potential. So, you know, the more I get into it, the more I love it.
So you've come out of the Air Force, and you've gone into supporting, so your dad was a career advisor. That's amazing. How long had he been a career advisor for?
He actually had a pretty similar journey to me. He went in the army when he left school, quite a long time ago now. And he was a radar technician for a really long time, but loved maths. And so he retrained as a maths teacher. And he did that for quite a number of years. And then eventually he had the opportunity to slide into their career advisor role at the school he was at. Yeah, he took it and he loved it. And I think he feels the same way that I do about it, that it's something really positive. It's a really positive field to be in a lot of the time. And yeah, it was nice to help him. It's really been really nice to work with my dad. He's a lovely man. And be part of that as well.
Yeah, that's so awesome. That's I feel like so many people have unique ways of getting into career development. Very few people like were at school thinking I want to do career development. Though I did actually, I have chatted to one guy that I'm going to interview shortly, and he actually was saying like he went and had a career in the corporate world and stuff, but he actually can remember back and having thoughts as a kid of like I would love to support people with careers. And it wasn't until like years and years later and he's working on a book that he's realized, oh, like he can remember having that thought as a kid, but I haven't heard of many people.
No, I know one other lady whose father was also a careers advisor and she's about my age and got into it as well. I mean, it's kind of always been like I was about 10 and I used to go to his office with him in the school holidays and I would take down all the careers bullseye posters. I don't know if you know the government back, you know, in the 90s, they produced these career bullseye posters. Yeah. And so I would replace them when the new ones came out and change over all the university handbooks and things in his office. And I don't know why it never kind of went through my mind as something that I would do back then. And also lived near a RAF base and I think that really influenced me choosing to go in the Air Force. But it seems quite natural now that I've kind of come back almost full circle to career development.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. You sort of touched on something there around, you know, you had the RAF base there and then that's influenced, your thinking around careers and where you sort of went. What do you think are the major factors that influence what someone sort of looks at for a career?
So we know that there are some general factors that tend to influence most young people, but it really is an individual process. You would tend to have the same sort of aspirations as other people in your family, whether that's your parents or your aunties and uncles, grandparents. So we know that if a parent expects their young person to go to university, they're like four times more likely to go to university than someone whose parent doesn't expect them to go. So obviously the people you're around have a huge impact on the decisions that you make. But then I think there's also this real serendipity that kind of comes into our career decisions. It'll be that moment that you had an accident and were in the ambulance with a paramedic and saw what they were doing and thought, oh, I really want to do that too. Or you'll go to a career expo and you'll, you know, walk past a table and say hello to someone and have a great conversation and that will be the thing. Or even somebody will offer you a job, a family friend or someone you know will say, hey, I've got an apprenticeship for you or I've got this position for you. And you'll say yes, and then that'll kind of lead into something else. And so a lot of the time it's not always easy to pinpoint it to one thing, but I think it's really important to be aware that we need to give young people lots of opportunities to have those moments. Mm. So there's a really great quote from the OECD when they talk about with career development, you really got to be throwing mud at the wall and seeing what sticks. And the more mud you can throw at that wall, the more opportunities that you can put in front of young people, the better the chance that they're going to find something that sticks that's actually right for them. Mm. So I think that's a really important factor.
And do you think that's happening more today than previously? How have you seen career development change over the years, I guess, particularly in the school sort of space?
It's one of those fields where it feels like everything's changing all the time, but then there's also some things that have been pretty similar for a really long time. I think post-COVID we've seen some real shifts in terms of work experience dropping off a little bit, and that was happening before COVID, but I think COVID sort of really accelerated that. Work experience, when it still happens, is amazing, but it's one part of the puzzle. Same with things like career expos and kind of visiting different workplaces. A lot of that has not dried up, but it's not as prevalent as it was. I think that we're working better with industry, and particularly I see in pockets around the place, whether that's in Australia or overseas, there'll be these little pockets where schools are working really well with industry and bringing everyone together, and then the young people can start to really think about what their future might look like. And part of the challenge for our area is to make sure that that doesn't just happen in pockets, but that that happens all over the place, and that every student, no matter which school you're in, has the opportunity to have those kind of connections and build that kind of
network. What do you think are the barriers there to school and industries partnering together more effectively and that could see it happen on a more broad scale, do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's a few key barriers. Often when you see it working well, which I think is probably easier to focus on than where it's not working, because it does work well even in schools where there are high issues with behaviour or with disadvantage. So it's not that it's only working in sort of the elite areas, but where it works, you've usually got support from leadership, so the school leadership team on the department or whoever is, at a management level in that area really cares and really wants that to happen. You'll have great industry, so maybe a Chamber of Commerce that's really active and really happy to volunteer and support, or other industry bodies in that area that are taking part. And it's also working really well when we see different programs that are being brought in. There's programs down in Victoria, Passions and Purpose, that work with primary schools. And that's where the government's funding or a group has been funding a certain project to take place. And I know there are things going on in New South Wales as well that have been making a big impact in that kind of way. So we kind of need everyone. We need the individual schools and school leadership to get on board. We need the industry to get on board. And we also need, at a higher level, we need funding and support and resourcing from the government or from whoever's in overseeing that process, to kind of bring everything together, because otherwise it's very, very difficult for an individual careers advisor in a school, say, to set all of that up without those other factors.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all the different systems coming together. It's something I give a lot of my time and thought to, this thinking through those sort of big systems that need to find a way to come together and collaborate. And it was interesting chatting to like one of my colleagues the other day was saying something around like, to collaborate requires a shared goal. Mm-hmm. And so that means you need industry and you need school, you need government, you need everyone to have a shared goal to really be able to collaborate well together. And so that is probably one of the challenges, is getting everyone on the same page of, well, what's our goal here? And then all of that, we're going to, because we want to then have the kid on board with that goal as well, so, or that's that young right. person, and even people, you know, that have now finished school, they've even been through uni, they're still trying to work out what their career path is, especially when you're coming to the end of uni. I've sort of interviewed some uni students for this podcast, and, you know, they're trying to work out, like, well, what do I actually now do with this degree that I've got, and how do I apply this and make this work out in the real world and stuff? What do you think are some of the things that someone today, like, that's sort of in their career, that is sort of maybe trying to work out their career path, what's something that would be happening now in career development that they may have missed when they were at school, that they would be like, I wish someone said this to me when I was at school?
I think when I work with adults, they're slightly different. So when you're talking to a young person, all the options are kind of open at that point. When you talk with an adult, it's a very different conversation, because if they're going to make a change in their career, they're going to let go of things they've already done. And so mentally, that's quite a different conversation. I think that with adults, the one thing that I say is not to try to plan, with young people as well, but particularly with adults, is not to try to think about, where am I going to be in 5 years or 10 years, you know, and design everything around that. Think about, where are you right now? What are some small changes we could make right now that would, improve where you feel like you are, and focus on those next steps. So sometimes people will come and we'll have these conversations and they're like, oh, I think I want to do this in 2 years, so I need to do this first and this first. It's like, chill out. Let's just work out which course do you want to do? There's three course options in front of you. Which one's most appealing? Let's just pick that first, because at the end of the day, we don't know what's going to happen. So many things happen in our lives. Our lives are dynamic. They're not static. We can't really plan that effectively that far out. So, but if you're making the best decisions for yourself on a sort of 6 to 12 month time frame, or just saying, what's the actual decision that I need to make here, and then making that actual decision, not trying to think forward too far. I often find that then when I catch up with those people again in 12 months time or 2 years time, that it's led them to somewhere that is unexpected. They didn't expect it to lead that way, but they're really happy with where it led. So it's that, if you're already in your career and you're not sure what to do next, like, stop trying to make it into a bigger decision than it needs to be. Step back a little bit and just think about what decisions you actually need to make next.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And do you think that's what makes career development in school so important, and for young people, is that they're getting to think about this while their options are wide open.
Yeah, and that's a positive. And then sometimes that's also difficult because it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much I could do. Yeah. How do I pick? I think when I'm working with students, like we do a suite of subject selection resources, and it's really important with those resources that we're not asking them to pick a specific job or a specific degree when they're trying to pick their senior subjects, because they don't know. Like 2 years is a long time. 15 to 17 or 18 is a big difference. I know that a good number of those kids are going to change their plans in senior, what, during the time in senior school. So I would hate to think that someone's decided I'm going to do this specific degree at this specific university and pick their subjects accordingly when there's a pretty good chance that that's, you know, not what they're still going to want to do. So it's once again, taking it down, back to that. What do I actually need to make a decision about right now? And then putting it back onto what they're interested in and what their strengths are. So those are the two things that we try to really focus on, is not so much, you know, what sort of job do they see themselves in, but what sorts of things are you interested in and what are you really good at?
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's where that whole conversation comes in of, like I often talk about, like career development is just as much life development. And yeah, this sort of understanding yourself, and the more you can understand yourself, the better you can sort of apply that to all kinds of different industries and stuff, rather than getting super prescriptive on the pressure of locking in a job. I had a chance in my last role before I left Bathurst to talk to a group of students sort of in year 10 that were sort of considering whether to stay on to year 12 or to leave and go on the job. And the main point of my talk was, take the pressure off, you know, like, I left at the end of year 10, I went and did a trade, and then after my, you know, trade, I sort of moved into youth work and then ended up in career development, and things will shift and go as they do. And whatever you end up going into, it's, you know, it's not a life sentence. So yeah, taking that pressure off.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
So one of the other things that I really want to unpack is parents and how to be supporting parents to support a young person through this, the process of thinking through what they want to do, because there's so many things happening in that dynamic. You know, you've got a parent who's anxious for their child's well-being and wants them to be set up and have a really successful life, but then sometimes that can be the thing that makes it harder for them to support them and to actually identify what's going to be best for that young person. Like, what's your advice to parents in supporting a young person through that sort of decision-making and exploration process of career?
I think the number one piece of advice I normally give to parents and families is just don't panic. When a young person and their family's trying to work out what happens after school, there's a lot more that goes into it. I know it sort of ends up looking like a career conversation, but there's also, you know, where are you going to live? You know, what kind of person are you going to become? How am I going to talk to my friends about this? Who's going to support you? Are you going to live at home? Are you going to move out? It's kind of all these other questions that we don't necessarily include in career development all the time, but that a family will be having with, you know, as part of this. And a lot of the research shows that parents have this real fear that either the young person's going to leave home or that they're not going to leave home. They're afraid that the young person's going to make bad choices or incorrect choices. But we know that young people are actually quite sensible. When we look at the research, they tend to make really sensible, safe decisions for themselves. There's very few young people out there who make wild, very, you know, completely negative decisions. And even when they do, if they say the parent doesn't want them to take a gap year and they want to take a gap year, they'll go on that gap year, come back after a year off and enroll in university or have a really clear idea of what they want to do. So the parents build it up to be this big, scary thing, but it's actually probably not that bad. Mm. And the other thing is that in trying to let go a little bit and trying to worry about it a little bit less, we can then allow the young person to make their own decisions. It's a bit easier for them to sort of stand back a little bit and let them. And it's so important that the young person takes ownership over whatever decision that they do make. Because if they're not owning that, then there's a pretty good chance that they're not going to be as committed to it. They're not going to feel as positive about it. So it's kind of whatever decision they do make has got like a less chance of success than if they had taken ownership over it. So it's kind of a win-win. Chill out, calm down, let the kid make their own decision. They might make a wrong one, and that's fine. That's on them. but at least it'll be their decision.
Absolutely.
Not yours.
And so, if it was their decision, they can learn from it. And they can learn for themselves that it's not the right decision, rather than if someone's telling them it's the wrong decision, it's like, well, one, they're just going to dig their heels in. But then you also feel like you've been robbed of that opportunity, you know? And that's where so much of the growth is in making the decision, and this building that capacity to be able to make decisions is going to set them up for all kinds of career success if they're people that can make decisions, because pretty much that's probably one of the best skills that you can have for life and work, really. Yeah,
that's right. It's one of the reasons why we, with all the subject selection stuff we're doing, sort of 2 years out from them leaving school generally, is trying to convince the families to let the students decide what subjects they want to study. And, you know, maybe provide opinions, but not to dictate what happens, because then the young person's already got experience of that. Otherwise, you're just pushing it down the road, because at some point the young person's going to make their own decisions. You're not going to have a parent talking to a 50-year-old and telling them what to do. So we're just trying to help them make that process and build those skills earlier.
Yeah. So I just listened to a webinar the other day that's come out, and I'm probably going to botch who did it. I'm thinking the Gottman Institute, but that might not be right. But it was a study looking at the number of people quite quitting from their employment. Mm-hmm. And so it was for Australia, something like maybe 20% of people were reporting as being engaged in their employment. And there was upwards of 70% people like registering as quiet quitting, meaning sort of actively disengaged from their work, not really going above and beyond. They're sort of, they're there, they'll go through the motions, they'll do enough to not get fired, but just enough to sort of get through unnoticed and not really have to fully engage with their work. Where do you think career development has a role to play in sort of seeing that level of engaged workers increase?
So I know the Gallup Institute have done quite a lot of work on. They produced this State of the Workforce report that's was really, like you mentioned, it's always a really interesting read. I think from a career development point of view, you've kind of got to take it from two sides. You've got to say, well, if people are turning up and doing their job, as long as they're doing what they've been employed to do and they're meeting the requirements of their job, then technically there's nothing wrong with them doing that. You're not employed to necessarily go above and beyond unless you choose to do so. So it's worth stating that to start with, not expecting, like, I know we talk a lot about passion and purpose, and there's kind of this thing that gets put on young people, like, oh, you've got to love your job, and you've got to, you know, what is it, that if you love your work, you'll never work a day in your life, or something like that. But that doesn't have to be the case. There are lots and lots and lots of people who turn up, do their job perfectly competently, very, very well, get paid, go home, have their own lives, and that's fine. On the other side of things, people who are engaged, and there's research to support that people who are engaged at work and who enjoy what they do and who are actively looking for more ways to contribute and, you know, active participation, they're also usually more successful. They have higher lifetime income. They have higher job satisfaction and a range of other health and well-being benefits from that. So we know that while you don't have to be engaged, if you can be engaged, there's going to be benefits for you as well as for your employer. Like, sure, your employer is going to benefit if you're engaged at work. Of course they are. Society and the economy are going to benefit if you're engaged at work. But you will also benefit. So I think when you come at it from that point of view within career development, it stops being like almost a stick to beat kids with, you know, like, oh, you've got to be engaged. And if you're not engaged, you're quite quitting and you're doing all these negative things. And it puts it back into context and go, well, you know, great, this is what work actually is. But, you know, wouldn't it be awesome if you could also really engage with what you do?
Absolutely. And that's a really good point and a good balancing perspective. And it is really, it's probably that data is probably more so, it's less about the sort of large numbers of it, and more so it's about of that percentage of people that are, you know, quiet quitting, whatever that might be, how many of them wouldn't be if they knew that they could be going into work that was something that made them passionate and want to give more of themselves and be creative and really get some excited? And that's probably the area of concern, is if there is someone that's currently quiet quitting that would actually be willing to get really passionate about something that they're doing, if they knew that there was a pathway or an option for them that was something that excited them, but maybe they've been told, no, you have to be a lawyer because that's respectable, or, you know, you have to work for the government because that's stable, and, you know, whatever it might be. But they, deep down, they really wanted to be a graphic designer, and everyone told them, no, that's, you know, that's a terrible career path and you can't make any money. And so now they're sitting behind some desks that sort of miserable when they could actually be really engaged in a great career and kicking goals and doing all kinds of great things.
I think there's sort of two sides to that. The first is that I think we'd all love to be able to craft our own job that met our needs exactly, and probably would be more creative and have a lot of flexibility and freedom. Like, that sounds like the ideal for a lot of us, but there is a lot of work that needs to get done that doesn't look like that, and doesn't mean that it's not meaningful work. The other thing is, sometimes I say to people, particularly adults, when we're talking about why they're unhappy, I'm like, well, why'd you pick that job in the first place? Because, you know, you went through an application process. Unless you lied through your teeth in your interview, you must have sounded like you were keen to do this job for some reason or another. Can we tap back into what got you there in the first place? And perhaps often when I talk with people who are wanting to have a career change, it's got nothing to do with the actual work that they do. It's got to do with the administration and the extra stuff that they have to do as part of their job that's not their core work, or a conflict with a manager, or a conflict within a workplace, or the working conditions aren't working for them. They have to travel an hour each way every day and that's just too hard, or they can't attend things that their kids' school because their boss won't give them flexibility. And none of those things have anything to do with the original reason why they chose that particular field or that interest area. And sometimes, you know, when we're talking to people, they come to me and they're like, I need to change. I need to completely change. And it's like, well, okay, do we, or can we slide? Can we find something else that still uses all of those strengths and skills and interests, but just suits you better?
Yeah. Kind of two and that's where I often think about people actually being given the skills to manage their career. And if you can actually get those skills so that you can be continuously reflecting upon what you're doing, so that you do have the skills to find little tweaks rather than like being like, oh, I got this job and now it's not what I expected and I need to go and completely start again, rather than sort of being able to really assess the different elements and work out just the little things that they can be doing to either within that workplace to be making it more suitable for them, knowing how they can advocate for themselves and sort of talk through things with their managers or their colleagues too. Because if they know their strengths better, then they might be able to sort of best say, hey, I could do this bit and do you want to do that bit? And you work it out with your colleagues and stuff. So those career management skills and tools that you can get through working with a, you know, your career advisor when you're at school, or, you know, a coach or a mentor or something like that, can be really powerful for setting someone up to actually manage their career. And, you know, people often sometimes use the language of like, you're a business of one. Like, you know, you can think of yourself like, even though you might be working as an employee in a company, you still need to be managing yourself and, you know, your career path. And that might keep you in with an employer that might see you move on. But when you're doing it for the right reasons and with good logic behind it, that's better than the, you know, jumping across the new employer thinking, oh, there won't be any managers over there that annoy me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess to wrap up, if people want to hear more about you and what you do, how could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so Study Work Grow, if they just search for us on Google, they'll find us. And the work that we do, and always happy to hear from schools and from other people who are interested. I'm also on LinkedIn. I think that's probably a really easy way to get in touch with me, follow and you can read my newsletters and things and have that conversation over there as well. So yeah, those two ways.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me, Lucy.
No, thank you for having me, Alex.
Righty. Well, I think thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.